Hi, this is Marcus Daly. Join me at the Edge of AI to explore machine learning and big data together on the podcast where we blend AI, creativity with culture. Keep listening.
Hello, AI podcast passengers. Jump on in. Here's what's to come on today's journey. Find out how a visionary leader is reshaping the insurance landscape in part by utilizing AI to replace personal bias that so often limits our learning. Learn the delicate balance of personalized AI and insurance by delving into ethical considerations and being able to ensure that those pre-AI could not be insured. And finally, we will look into the future of insurance where quantum computing meets AI. All this and more, take your seat.
Welcome aboard the Edge of AI podcast. Snap into your safety belt and prepare to explore the depths of the rapidly expanding AI universe. Each episode is a dispatch featuring hyper-relevant reports from the pilots, pioneers, and passengers aboard the AI rocket ship. We explore the latest use cases and developments in AI, hear from experts building tech, and learn how this disruptive force is transforming industries and society.
Welcome aboard. I am Ron Levy, your captain for today's voyage to the Edge of AI. Just like most of you, I've embraced the spirit of exploration and entrepreneurship throughout my life, from starting my own business before graduating high school to traversing the world's most challenging terrains. I've always sought out new frontiers and adventures. I built one of the largest award-winning custom home companies in Los Angeles, and most recently, I've navigated complex regulations while founding and leading a public company. It is dedicated to applying technology and training. Buckle up and get ready. Let's tackle uncharted territories in AI today with curiosity as our guiding star. Today's episode is featuring Marcus Daly. He's a co-founder of Neurometrics and Loot 8. Marcus is a visionary leader in AI technology, renowned for his passion for building global teams and pushing the boundaries of innovation. As a driving force behind Neurometrics, he champions bleeding-edge technology to provide risk intelligence data for property and casualty insurance. He also serves as CTO for 3E, the leading global provider of environmental health and safety information. And he's co-founder of Loot 8, an enterprise-level content management platform in the Web3 space. Previously, Marcus was a two-time chief technology officer at S&P Global and has been CTO for various other global companies and leading-edge startups. Neurometrics pioneers transparent, accurate risk quality insights and insurance organizations. Neurometrics is on the path to resolving today's challenges in classification, risk insights, and compliance, seamlessly ensuring a dynamic and compliant future insurance industry. We're excited to explore this use case for AI when it comes to enterprise challenges like managing risk. And as someone deep in the world of risk management, we'll also touch on the multi-layered risk with AI and the tension between those that want to slow it down and speed it up. So first, I just want to say welcome, Marcus. We're really excited about having you this episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. It's great. Nice to chat with you.
Yeah, fantastic. You've got a huge resume and it's really great to be able to learn from you. So we're looking forward to this. Big data and machine learning have been key tools that you've leveraged to solve business problems. When did you first begin to leverage AI, and how's your perspective on the importance of AI to enterprises shifted over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, I actually was dabbling in AI back in the 90s. I started my career back in the early 90s. Back then, it was a very different animal than it is today. The power wasn't there to really do as much that you could see the vision, but you really couldn't do that much. OCR was kind of the primary use case, seemed for whatever reason. But big data, on the other hand, I got involved with that in 2010-ish. A lot of my career, when you look on my LinkedIn profile, has been spent in information services. And when it comes to information services, these are large bodies of information that you want to be able to do analytics on. And so big data to me was a big draw. And then AI kind of starting to pick up and discover these interesting ways you could make relationships between these pieces of information that were going into these big data systems. And that kind of like renewed my interest in AI. I'd say sometime between 2010, 2014 in particular, a real revival for me on the AI side.
That was a big change right at that time. And to the masses, the biggest change was about 15 months ago, right? But I would suggest that the snowball was rolling by about 2014, and people in the industry were finding great use cases and helping to develop it, getting prepared for what was next, which is really right now. And in that effort, you know, AI has transformed a lot of industries, and we've covered many of them, but not insurance. So I'd like to dive deeper into what challenges the industry has and compare it to other spaces where AI has a profound impact.
Yeah. I mean, like, insurance is an interesting one. It's actually a really good fit for AI, because what you're measuring is you're measuring risk, right? And risk is a function of probabilities. And so we actually started Neurometrics in 2017, focused on the insurance industry. Back then, you didn't quite have the same kind of excitement and tools that you've got today around AI, but we could see the potential because we were already working with vectors and other things. We had a grand vision, and we felt that given the nature of insurance being probabilities focused, this was a perfect fit. I would say insurance has been difficult because it's being a risk-focused industry. They're a little slow to adopt things, but we've been in this, have great customers, and been able to make good progress with it. But the one thing that, and we'll talk probably, I'm sure, you know, I'll make some other points on this later, but we chose a part of the industry that's actually the hardest one as it relates to commercial businesses. We chose small commercial businesses generally, sometimes going into the mid-size. And small commercial businesses are hard because there's very little data. So trying to perform AI on very little data is a trick. And so that's been a fun challenge over the last several years.
That's an interesting dynamic, because the big companies can use it the most when they have all the data, but it's like turning a tanker to try and get them to get started to use it. Very interesting dynamic. Do you have a real world example where machine learning and big data significantly improve risk intelligence? You know, within the insurance sector, that did lead to better outcomes for, let's say, both the insurers and the consumers as well.
Yeah, well, for sure. Lots of different cases. Yeah, we've had a case some time ago, for example, with one of our customers, where there was a company that they underwrote. Our system is telling them, don't underwrite it. They went back multiple times with our system telling them the same thing. And they underwrote the business. The business had a major claim, let's put it that way. That claim was very expensive. And had they followed what we had told them to do, which was to, I mean, we indicated the risk was high. It was outside their risk appetite. And so had they listened to that, they wouldn't have incurred that claim. They were curious, right? Okay, well, how, first of all, why did they not listen to the system, number one? Number two, what was it that our system was picking up on, right, that was causing it? Because their underwriters were picking up on it. And so there's a lot of work, you know, going back and forth to look into that. And it turned out that there was a particular type of activity that was happening at night that we were picking up on with our system that was flagging this as a much higher risk than otherwise they would have detected. But it was kind of buried, you know, in some different places. I mean, I should mention, by the way, one of the things that Neurometrics does that's different from almost all other providers out there is we don't use typically private data. We can, but our real strength is being able to go out on across the internet, across all different types of data that's public, and bring that back and then assess risk. And that's part of why we were able to detect that, because our data source is the actual public web for information about these businesses that they can't typically acquire themselves. So that's one of the, you know, from an alpha or beta, let's say probably beta.
And now a brief interlude from today's show so you can get ready to wave your magic wand with Cast Magic. Our team has saved a ton of time and money using Cast Magic for our show, and the potential use cases are boundless for any company creating content. Imagine turning a single recording into a goldmine of engagement for any type of show, webinar, or other type of audio and/or video content, whether it's short or long. With Cast Magic, you can save over 20 hours a week. No more tedious transcribing or brainstorming social media posts. Cast Magic does it all, generating show notes, summaries, blog posts, and even newsletters in minutes. Think of it as your content alchemist, transforming every audio or video into a treasure trove of valuable content. Want to experience the magic? Get a 7-day trial on us by going to bit.ly/castmagicreferral and join Cast Magic's vibrant Slack community of over 1,000 innovators. Don't just create, cast your magic with Cast Magic.
Little beta enabler because we can see things that they aren't seeing today, if that makes sense.
Well, hence LLM. I mean, the amount of data that's available operating the way you are is tremendous. But a lot of times, too much data means you can't process it. You can't really do anything with it. And what you're doing, yeah, solving that. So that's helping the small businesses that don't have the internal data. So it seems like a really, really good solution. But how do you address concerns around data privacy and ethical considerations when it comes to implementing advanced tech, like, you know, machine learning in the insurance sector?
Yeah, well, there's lots of ways to answer that question. I'm going to answer it from the context of neural metrics, if you don't mind, just because this is actually an approach I've taken in some of the other companies that you mentioned, you know, in my intro and elsewhere. What we do is we go out and we capture public information about the business. We're not capturing information about people. So we've avoided privacy issues. We're pulling it from the public web. So from a fair use perspective and something that's already been publicly disclosed, that's already available too. And then we typically work hard to steer away from situations that are going to cause us to be assessing individuals and focus just on businesses. And so while we've had many opportunities to go assess personal lines, perhaps we'll go down that path at some point. Right now, for us, it's businesses for the reasons of, A, we can actually avoid a whole host of different bias issues and privacy issues. Additionally, because we're gathering what's available on the web, we're assessing the risks that we see in that public data. We're then presenting those as our assessment of those facts. And when I say facts, to be clear, this is a representation of the data as it's presented on the web. Doesn't mean it's factual. It just means that that's what's being presented on the web. We're not interpreting. But we are, the only thing, if you want to say we're interpreting something, we're saying, hey, this looks like a risk. Is this within your risk appetite? Here's the data source. And so by doing that, what we're avoiding is like adding in all of these judgments, we're avoiding all these biases. We're just simply repackaging the information and then presenting it in the form of a possible risk. And then asking the underwriter, does this matter to you or not? Make your choice. That helps us avoid a lot of those sort of issues that you would otherwise be saying, you know, from a bias perspective or a privacy issue perspective.
No, well thought out, and you explain it to be a very simple solution. And it's, I think, born out of lots of experience, which you bring to the table. So I really, really kind of get it. But how do you navigate the integration of AI solutions and maintain the traditional industry standards and regulations that insurance already has? And is there any particular resistance or hesitation that comes with building within this space?
I think the only resistance is just change. There's fear of having something. Companies are underwriters or insurance companies are afraid of. They don't want to make mistakes. They don't want to be held accountable for something that they otherwise could have controlled, right? And so one of the things that we're very careful about is making sure that we're not putting them in that kind of a position. That's the biggest resistance that we get. So one of the things you mentioned in my introduction was my time at S&P Global or some of the other businesses I've been at. Those have had very, and I would argue in some cases, some of the most regulated industries or companies on the planet, especially on the rating side. As a result of that, I have a real appreciation for what the regulators are asking for. So from the beginning with neural metrics, and I would suggest this, by the way, for any AI project that's going to be providing information to an industry that's going to be regulated, let's put it that way, to be honest with you, with really any consumer of that information, make sure that you can point back to the data source. Make sure that you can describe, then if you can point back to the data source, how you calculated that. You don't have to give the exact machine algorithm, but you do need to be able to explain it. By being able to provide that to the carrier, to the underwriter, they're able to turn around to an auditor or to a regulator and say, hey, or to a, you know, a judge in some sort of a suit and say, hey, this is how we came to it. Here's the data source. Here is the judgment that was called. It's with, you know, with inside or outside of our risk appetite. It had nothing to do with all these other things you might want to claim. That transparency is absolutely key. And so we've really worked hard to maintain that, to help them feel comfortable that it's explainable and protectable and doesn't add liability to what they're doing, if that makes sense.
Oh, not only does it make sense, it's also critically important in the constant improvement process, which the industry is, which your company is for sure. Unless you know what went really right and what went really wrong, it doesn't mean a major degree. It could be a couple of percentage points of a degree. How do you continuously improve? So having that information, that data is critical, but let's not leave personalized AI. So Tesla made headlines by placing an algorithm where they have a specific set of parameters that determine the price of their insurance. If you frequently drive at night, there's a significant increase in your monthly payment. And that's quite a pushback from people who work in the graveyard arena for sure. So let's say in healthcare sector, right? I mean, do you happen to have a similar model, or have you cracked the code on balancing that aspect?
Yeah, I mean, I've been driving a Tesla for a long time. Great work, in my opinion, with what they've done. We are careful to make sure we present the facts, leave the judgments to the consumer of the information. So yes, they drive at night. Hey, you go ahead and decide what's in your risk appetite. We're just telling you that this is when they're predominantly driving and that these are potential risks. Do you want to accept those risks or not? Really, it's up to the carrier to do that, you know? And so what we don't do is we don't make judgment calls, right? And I know that's kind of a fine line between saying, hey, there's a potential risk versus being a judgment call. But the types of risks that we're typically pointing out are ones that are property and casualty related. Maybe that's another way to help kind of frame it. Look, if you're manufacturing goods on site, then the machinery poses a risk to your employees. That is just a fact. So that right there is already a risk that you can say. Or another one would be if your store is open, and this is kind of getting to one of your points there in terms of driving at night. If you have a store that's open 24 hours a day, you do know, and this is true, by the way, we don't calculate in like zip codes or any of that kind of stuff. Again, that would be something that might introduce some bias. What we do know, though, is that staying open all 24 hours does introduce risk during certain times of the night globally. No matter where you're at, there's just higher risk. Okay, is that a problem, right, or not? That's up to you as a carrier. So we're very careful to make sure that there isn't some kind of a score increase that we introduce because we believe that this is a higher risk activity. We're just saying this is a risk. You choose whether or not you want, how you want to score that risk. We leave the scoring up to the carrier. And it's been interesting, by the way, because we have a number of customers, a number of carriers, some of the largest in the world, and they do score things quite differently, right? They do value certain things quite differently. They actually ask very different questions. To be clear, they're very good at what they do, but the fact that they are so different also is part of what's lend itself to our approach, because if we would try to take one size fits all, we would only probably have one carrier as a customer. So we have to be flexible enough to allow them to make those judgment calls.
And I would assume that, you know, you're providing them an incredible service and then analytics of a whole lot of data, but that doesn't have to be the last stop. Let's go back to the Tesla example. The insurer could look at it and say, okay, well, let's find out the occupation of these people, which you wouldn't do because that's private information. They could add that on and say, hey, they're just driving to work. They're not bar hopping. It doesn't end at your work, right? Is that correct?
There could also be other reasons. I do want to point this out. This is an interesting one. There are circumstances too unique to the product that may be causing that. Driving my Tesla, I can't use autopilot at night because can't see my eyes because of the darkness. Therefore, I have to turn it off. That's just a funny thing about mine for whatever reason. And that, I'll be honest with you, that actually increases my risk dramatically because if I fall asleep at the wheel, whatever, the autopilot is fantastic. It really de-stresses things. So I can imagine then maybe it would cause it to go up because the technology in the car is not quite where it needs to be to support, you know, more safely during the night. So there's a lot of those sort of factors that, you know, I mean, you and I may not be aware of that could be influencing the reasons why they're making some judgment calls.
Yeah, for sure. And I would suggest it. All of that is improving literally every single day. Where we are today is different than 30 days from now or a year from now. It's amazing. It's all work in progress. In your view, what role does collaboration between industry stakeholders, regulators, and technology experts, what role does collaboration with all those play in shaping the future landscape of risk intelligence and how it can benefit consumers.
Well, I'll answer that question based on some of the recent events, you know, around OpenAI and some of the fallout there, some of the doomsayers out there around AI. I think there's a need for people to collaborate and learn. Right. What we're dealing with here is math. I mean, it's just math. And at the end of the day, fear can cause a lot of times people to like retract and say, hey, we need to slow down. The problem is that math is open source. Everybody can have access to it. It's moving at a high speed. And you have to keep up with it. Because if you choose to slow down, well, everybody else isn't. And all it does is just put you at a disadvantage. Through collaboration, and I would argue this is especially important with regulators, it's important to collaborate with industry experts that are actually, you know, in at selling products, not academically, but actually working on the products themselves and understanding, you know, what is a best practice, good practice, what are ones that aren't that great or all out bad, and start to create some rails there that don't slow down. They just help with saying, hey, for now, this is something that we don't want you to provide. That can't happen without significant collaboration, and it has to be more than one voice in the room. It has to be somebody who's active in the industry, multiple, and it has to be somebody on the other side who's receiving that and willing to do so with as little bias as possible. That's the best way that regulation or industry partners or standards are created, is through that kind of mechanism. You know, you think back to the early 1990s when the internet was kind of starting to form, and you can think about other types of, you know, big things have happened over the last 30 years. The best outcomes have always happened when people have gotten together and created a unified standard, a set of risks and regulations that fit. That's the benefit of collaboration. The challenge, I would argue, last comment on that would be, I do feel culturally, at least in the United States, we've kind of lost our ability to be able to hear the other side. I'm overstating a little bit. Whereas if you look in Europe, and we do a lot of business in Europe, they're very accustomed to regulation, and so they have a tendency to be willing to listen to multiple sides. It just goes slow, but they actually produce some very good regulation. And so I think that there's a need for us to be able to find a balance here, you know, between over-regulation, but then also being willing to hear both sides and then try to get to the right outcome.
So you stated it so well, and it's been an ongoing problem with other emerging technologies and regulators addressing it in one way, but the industry themselves moving along anyway. Right. So you're not trying to go against the regulators. The regulators, by their very nature, just can't keep up. I mean, unless you're working on the keyboard yourself in the industry, you're not keeping up either. So that's interesting. What came to mind for me is an AI program to help the regulators, an AI program that's assessing all these changes and what's going on to deliver them the things from which they can make the decisions. Because government by nature has to be very methodical, and in a legacy style, where, you know, we work in an industry that is immediate and it moves on very quickly and very short-lived, honestly, you know, on its own momentum, and bringing that divide together, there's the challenge. So, you know, hopefully it works out, because you're talking insurance. That's a large part of our economy. And the closer we get to really knowing the risk, the more efficiently it's all going to run.
Well, not only more efficient, I'm just add one comment on that, but to be honest with you, the more likely people who can't get insurance today can. Because actually a big part of the problem is because you couldn't assess all the information. You were kind of like drawing these lines where you were just cutting people out of the system. So rather than trying to maximize profit, what you should be maximizing as much as possible is those horrific risks, because you got to run a successful business. But it should be able to open doors and give access to people today who can't get insurance, because in fact they're not risky, or they fit your at risk appetite, but you wouldn't have seen them in the older systems, right? That's where I'm hoping this goes, is that kind of an outcome.
Is that kind of an outcome? I think that's incredibly important. And again, it's full circle with AI, because AI can take the data and in real time let anyone that needs to know, whether it's inside of an ecosystem or outside, what the status is, how's it going, and, you know, what needs to be changed. Whereas before, we've had to have rooms full of actuaries and people trying to figure it all out. This is just a game changer. Let's jump to quantum computing. For those of us that are new in the space, can you provide an overview of how quantum computing is being deployed right now?
You know, if you look on my LinkedIn profile, we recently, as a company, announced our partnership with SUNY Binghamton, which is a university in New York State, very renowned public research university, amazing students and staff. That patent that we're working collaboratively with them on is a quantum patent. That patent is targeted at improving our ability to be able to do risk assessments and insurance. What we're finding is that this AI machine learning really is in its very early stages in quantum computing. In fact, to be honest with you, access to quantum computers has been very difficult because they're very expensive. The simulators can only simulate a small number of qubits typically. And so it's a space that is absolutely the cutting edge. And when done right, by the way, I'm inserting now some bias here, which means that you're like truly leveraging the full capability. What happens is, unfortunately, all of us as human beings are what's called skeuomorphic. We like to apply what we already know to something we don't know and just assume that that's right. So in quantum, what you see happening is that everybody keeps trying to convert quantum computing to make it look like classic computing, which means you're cutting out all these capabilities by trying to have zeros and ones on something that isn't actually a bit like that. And so what we're doing with ours, as an example, is we're using the full spectrum of a qubit, which is kind of the main processing unit inside of a quantum computer. And that allows us to be able to do things that, you know, people who are used to classic computing and the way of thinking can't. But it requires a mass. I mean, when I get into the patent work that we're doing, this will be the third patent I've been involved with. It is really hard to get your head around how that works, because you have to throw out all of your past knowledge and then literally take out a whole new body of knowledge and apply it on there, a thing that you know applies. And that's, think about it, right? We have all these people who are experts in doing different types of systems. They have to really hit the reset button and start over again. That means a lot of resistance. When I say resistance, it's a lot of friction, maybe is a better word, to getting into there and making use of it. But what we're seeing is there's a lot of power that's increasing very rapidly. I would argue photonics is one of the more promising ones. People may feel differently, but that's my opinion. And that kind of explosion of power, by the way, AI systems are often doing a lot of that architecture and helping grow and build those very rapidly, means now that I expect to see a lot of machine learning, a lot of AI type stuff starting to emerge onto those systems. So we're definitely early.
You have questions about blockchain? Like, how big of a block can you chain without throwing out your back? Or if you received that chain letter, how did you block it? And does blockchain taste better, barbecued or deep fried? Luckily, you don't have to ponder these quandaries alone anymore, because Blockchain Training Alliance is here to answer them and also train you in real-world blockchain issues that will impact your business's bottom line and oriented future forward along the ley lines of the most important tech humanity has perfected since harnessing atomic energy, if you're into those sorts of things. Blockchain Training Alliance is a top leader in the field, counting among its clients IBM, Microsoft, Disney, Morgan Stanley, and many more, and offering a wide array of technical and non-technical courses. Whether you're a computer neophyte training for an incredible career in this new space, or a coding expert honing your skills, Blockchain Training Alliance will help you steer your ship home safely, filled with treasure. Arg. So hurry and sign up for the Blockchain Training Alliance course that best fits your needs at blockchaintrainingalliance.com. Use discount code EDGEOF for 50% off and start your next block today.
Very, very early right now, but it will be the next unlock here very soon, I think, when it comes to AI.
Just amazing. You know, it's processing power. So now we've got large language models to house it, and then there's processing power combined at the speed of quantum computing or the power of quantum computing. I'm sure there may be, but the insurance industry, it's a big one for that. So, you know, there's so much. Yeah, it's large, so it's pretty amazing. Do you have any practical examples where quantum computing has already demonstrated significant impact and improvements in the insurance processes?
I don't, you know, and this is one of the funny things. I spent some time talking with a couple of the major providers of these systems 2 years ago, maybe. And they were struggling finding practical commercialization or production deployments beyond chemistry, aerodynamics, some of the, you know, anything that was highly probabilistic, and the normal systems that are being used elsewhere weren't quite meeting the need, or they needed to simulate nature perhaps. Well, then quantum was getting used, but with very few use cases. And so a lot of research, a lot of experimentation, a lot less practical deployments. So no, in insurance, no. In fact, to be honest with you, not just insurance, but also in financial services, very few deployments there as well. To me, there's a massive unlock. I mean, now, and of course, as time goes on, even more so in those two industries that I've been involved with, financial services and insurance. Because think about it, right? I mean, most insurance companies are not hiring quantum engineers, right? It's not a common thing you'd see in a job description. So you have to have a CIO or CTO typically who's thinking outside the box and is trying to seek something, like solve some business problem. And I we're going to get there, but I just think that we're very early at this point.
So let's stretch it out a little bit. So instead of today, let's talk about the next decade. So what do you envision over the next decade as your team gets better in predictive analytics?
Predictive analytics is an interesting one. Was involved with a business back in 2004, 2012, I believe, doing predictive analytics in the automotive space. Very exciting. Was not using really AI, more Bayesian networks and things like that. But predicting the future and where things are going is valuable, especially in financial services. I expect to see an expansion of that. But what I see personally happening more right now with AI, I'm giving a very biased view, okay, is more of an efficiency play than it is a predictive play. And of course, efficiency and being able to predict more predictions and be able to refine those and get those more accurate is, of course, is a function of that. But AI seems to be more and more becoming a tool to be able to give exponential speed ups to existing problems. Explore other alternative use cases or situations or algorithms that there was never going to be time to be able to explore before. But now, because the efficiency is so high, you can actually explore all these other alternatives, thus bringing a lot more alpha, we'll call it, to whatever you're working on, right?
Yeah.
In terms of improving predictive analytics, I see it more just being able to assess more options, right? Perhaps being able to go out and add more parameters to what you're looking at. But generally, to me, that's more of an efficiency play, at least with the current AI systems. I do think that with that, getting into, some of these like real predictions where, you're projecting out 10 years and you're using math that's unconventional, we may find that the more interesting predictions happen when you're using quantum and running simulations on a quantum machine than running them on a traditional GPU, just because of the fact that you get some sort of an analog view, given the way that quantum qubits work, versus a pure mathematical view on a GPU. So I think that might be the place where you see the most interesting predictive analytics. To be clear, being able to assess a broader field looks like you're improving predictive analytics when all you're doing really is just having more options to choose from, right? And that's the power of AI right now, to me, is again, just being way more efficient, more options, thus more knowledge, and then just being able to have more wisdom as a result of that.
So now we see it as less of a single solution, more of a feature to just about anything you're working on. And you spoke to that. The other thing, and you brought this up earlier, which I love, bias. One of the things that keeps us from predicting accurately or assessing things accurately is bringing our own personal bias into analyzing anything, right? Especially the more skill we have, our focus becomes narrower and narrower. So the more we have faith in the AI system, maybe even back with quantum computing, the more we'll trust them over our own biases and learn exponentially more as well. Am I stating all that accurately?
I think so. I mean, that's how I use it. I do know that, keep in mind, a lot of these models that are getting used, some of the ones I use myself, are open sourced. And as an open source model, there's always the possibility for somebody to insert particular set of information, of vectors, we'll call them, that can lead to bad outcomes, right? And so I do think we're not there yet, but we're going to come to a point where people are going to need to have some cryptographically verifiable way to be able to know that this data set came from, and by the way, this kind of gets to regulation in some ways too, is one that I can trust, right? And it's provable mathematically. We're not there yet. And I'm not terribly worried about it. I'm just saying that is something that I worry a bit about as time goes on here, because as I myself find myself using AI all day, every day, solving problems, and hooking them up to other systems via functions to be able to then pull more information and then be able to process that for me and so on and so forth. I then realize more and more that my dependency is growing larger, and I need to make sure that the bias or the alignment, maybe is another term that's used often, is one that isn't going to, unknowns to me, shift, but in such a subtle way that I don't realize it until it's too late, right? Or start making some bad decisions. So these are things to think about, certainly worth solving. Right now, though, I don't find myself stressed enough to like put any energy into that. I feel like I'm still in that stage where I'm trying to identify where are some of the limitations, how can I overcome those limitations, and then how can I make what I'm using user-friendly enough so the user experience can be used by somebody who doesn't care about the math, doesn't care about the computing, but wants the speed up or the advice or whatever it may be without all the heavy lifting, right? And I'm still working on that user experience piece, if you will, more than anything else.
All right. Well, before we move on to the next segment, I just want to see, is there anything we didn't cover that came to mind for you that you want to mention, and any predictions for the next big breakthroughs that are going to get our attention with AI and insurance beyond what we've discussed?
No, I mean, you focus on the right ones. I mean, quantum's a big one, right? I think that's going to be a big breakthrough. Probably the other one I would mention that is quite interesting, I'd say. One is these mixture of expert LLMs, this approach to, doesn't have to be an MOE. Sometimes they're called, RAGs. But either way, the breaking up of these LLMs from a monolithic LLM to ones that are specialized and then going and finding the best answer, that seems to be leading to some really good results, right? Even more, there's a product called MemGPT. And Q Learning is also kind of has some similar aspects to it, where being able to store state, between long runs, separate runs, whatever, now being able to really have long-term memory is an absolute game changer, right? This lost in the middle problem is being solved, right? Lastly, this quantization, where I can go to a much smaller bit size, say maybe a number of parameters, maybe fewer parameters, but when I use a smaller number of bits, I can take a complex LLM in this case, I can put it on a smartphone, and now I can have personalized AI on my smartphone. Apple recently released a white paper, others are chasing this, and this to me is a big unlock in 2024. You're going to see this explode. And it will be running locally, which to some of the other questions you're asking, it solves the problem of privacy. Because I'm not putting anything in the cloud, I can choose to have whatever I want here in a secure enclave, however that's secured. And now this ability to use AI in a very intimate way becomes possible without the risk of there being some sort of...
NFTLA returns as an inclusive week of community events throughout LA, celebrating the outer edge of innovation.
Builders be building.
There's so much energy colliding around gaming, AI, generative art, the metaverse, decentralized social, and the future of entertainment.
If you want to be in the mix, including the official free NFTLA celebration, visit outeredge.live to subscribe for your updates and RSVP.
Sort of a regulatory breach of some kind.
It really puts, in your own cell phone privately and for yourself, the amount of power that, a company like IBM probably had in total, take a year, 15, 20, 30 years ago, something like that. For each individual to be able to act with that type of compute is just amazing.
Yeah, that's exciting for sure.
We're going to move on to the next segment, which is AI Wants to Know. AI is curious and so are we. These are 10 quick questions and they're designed to uncover the intriguing human mysteries of AI that it longs to comprehend, but it can't quite grasp. It's a snack break from the journey, so keep your answers quick, but your safety belt sign, it's off. So if it feels right, we can roam about the cabin, exploring more of who you are and what makes you tick. You ready for this?
Sure.
All right, what's the first thing you remember being proud of?
So you sent me these questions ahead of time. I just want to admit to the people who are listening. This is the first time I've ever seen anything like this. They're actually hard questions. So
it's personal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It caused me to think. So that first one was the first thing you ever remember being proud of. I really struggled with that one. Actually, to me, here's what my response was. For me, it's always been more about being curious. I always felt like, hey, if that really triggered my curiosity, I felt a lot of real pleasure in that. You know, for me, it's always been more about curiosity than it has been about pride.
That makes sense for sure. What do you need help with that you wish you didn't?
This is where I could use my own AI.
The one on your head, please.
I'm so bad with names. I don't know what it is, but I just cannot remember people's names.
All right. What do others look to you for help with?
These days, it's unblocking problems. I manage a number of teams. There's some problems are very complex. And so I'm dealing with escalations every day. The escalations are not micromanagement escalations. There's something that needs to be unblocked that's quite significant, you know? So that's usually what it is.
Fantastic. Throughout your whole life, what's the most consistent thing about you?
Probably two things. Depends on who you talk to, but my work ethic, for sure. The other would be stories. I like telling stories, you know, a lot of experiences. So sometimes those are fun, but that usually only happens if it's over dinner. Otherwise, it's just my work ethic.
Well, you've got the stories. People have to pry them out of you. I'm sure that's what it takes. So what do you think has changed the most about you?
Yeah, this one, I gave some good thought to. I've lived around the world. I travel around the world. I'm you know, flying out again this weekend for a long trip. Life is complex. You know, when you live and work in different cultures, in different parts of the world, there's a lot of politics. Yet you sit down with people and they've all got families or people that they love. That's a common human trait. Life is just super complex. And so it's very easy to make the wrong judgment call about people because we all make judgment calls all the time, but they're usually made on very little bits of pieces of data or things that have been fed to us that are biased. It's really complex and the world is getting more and more complex. We just need to appreciate that.
Yeah. You brought that bias word in and it was exactly accurate. You know, we're only human and we do sit down with bias and make assumptions. I'm great at reading someone, but I found the more you can strip that out of your head and start from scratch, it's a far more adventurous life when it comes to, you know, creating relationships and knowing more people. What is it that you find strangest about reality?
I like this one. Perspectives. People are convinced something's true when it's not mathematically, right? That's always fascinating. Another one is, and actually I think this is even the more interesting one, as you get into quantum mechanics, quantum physics, everything that we know around us here actually is, you know, this classic physical world that we operate in is controlled by quantum physics, right? And that's a whole nother universe that's largely driven by light, and it's a fascinating place, right? And I feel like the more you have an appreciation for that, then the more like these weird things that happen or tragic things that happen, you start to realize there's a whole nother side to this universe that we don't understand. That's exciting. It's fascinating. And that's really what's driving reality is that side that you can't see. So to me, that's a fascinating way to think about, you know, going through life.
Especially on the heels of the answer you just gave. I love this next question for you in particular, you know, having gotten to know you. It's that moment we've all had one when all of a sudden you feel alive because something has happened or something you've done. When was the last time you remember having that feeling, a very powerful feeling like that?
Well, you know, I recently, there's been a lot of movement recently on these autogen AI agents, these frameworks that allow agents to be able to talk to each other. These are LLMs typically, and then be able to do a job, and they can do, we call it within my team's A-Star, which is a video game pathing technology. or algorithm. So this notion of being able to be self-directed and be able to be goal-seeking is I'll be honest with you, it's amazing. And it wasn't until fairly recently when we were working on another patent that I realized the power of what these autogen frameworks were bringing to the table with chain of reasoning and other things that I did not realize was going to happen as fast as it is. To the point where I'm actually still in that phase where I'm still grappling with the impact of what that means for my kids. Where this and it's moving at an exponential rate, which means your brain can't keep up with it. So while, I mean, that may sound like, I won't lie, it's a little bit depressing, but it's only depressing because it's hard to see the other side of that curve. But I'm very optimistic there is another side to that curve. And that to me, you know, to your point, is very exhilarating because I'm programmed to run towards those problems. And so now really juiced me, like gave me a lot of adrenaline to go figure out, okay, what's on the other side of that curve, man? I got to go figure that one out. And I love curiosity because I'm very curious about what that is. And so that for me right now, that's driving me a lot.
So I know in the beginning, we asked you the first thing you remember being proud of, but I'm going to suggest you've got this to be proud of. And that is that you're instrumental in developing, being a real part of what's coming that's going to shape the life of your kids in the macro world. And that's just, I hope you get a lot of buzz out of that because it's pretty powerful. Thank you. And with that, what is your most unique trait?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. People seem to really like the experiences that I share. And I don't mean that so much as I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting stories. I talked about stories a moment ago. I'm very open, very honest, and I try to share. Here's what I've seen. Here's what I've experienced. You do what you want. You know, whatever you recommend, but I'm going to share with you my experience. And the fact that I'm willing to share my experiences, a lot of people are afraid to share their experiences these days. You know, for whatever reason. I feel like I have an obligation to do that for the people who work for me, you know, for people who are asking for advice. So to me, the willingness to be able to share, and sometimes those are like self-deprecating, not always positive. If you're going to have a problem and learn from something that was difficult, what a gift to be able to give that to somebody else instead of, and help them maybe avoid that problem, right? So
fantastic. So that they can make their own, you know, have to deal with their own problems in life, but maybe they don't repeat yours, right?
Right. You hope.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good for all of us. All right. Well, here's an interesting one. If you weren't human, what would you be?
I don't have any problem with being a robot. I used to do a lot of sports, MMA, American football, you know, university level. And so I've had a lot of surgeries. So I've got artificial discs. I've had my shoulder rebuilt. I've had a bunch of back surgeries. I've had other surgeries all over the place. In fact, if you get an x-ray of my neck, it looks like the Terminator because I've got these artificial discs. They're not fusions. They're actually full-on discs. And so I've actually grown very comfortable with having technology be a part of what your body is. We haven't talked about that much today, but I do see that as being an important, you know, part of the future. I'm living with it every day, so it definitely works.
So I'm going to add a bonus question here based on that. How do you take your sports experience and all that it gave you, all that it taught you, and how do you take what you've learned out of those lessons and apply it in what you're doing now with AI? Is there a crossover or a huge learning that you got from that's helping you now?
Yeah, for sure. I've learned about myself is I'm highly competitive, right? So. I actually was doing CrossFit for a while. I'm a really bad person at the gym and at CrossFit because I'm too competitive. So I work out at home. and so I take that same competitive part of me. Like I have a goal for the day and then I work really hard to reach that goal, right? And then when I get really excited or curious about things, sometimes I make an impossible set of goals for myself. And then I don't, like last night, I didn't sleep at all last night. I was just working straight through. And that's because I had goals I wanted to achieve. I just, you know, cranked through them. And that, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't built like that. That came a lot from the sports side, you know, a lot from wanting to set the right example for my employees, for my kids and others. I lived in Japan. Japan has a workaholic culture. I'm generalizing, but a lot of that, I actually have a lot of respect, though, for what they do. Amazing work ethic. So when you incorporate those into, you know, your life, that's just how it developed for me. And I express it as a form of competitiveness, but definitely a lot of that's from sports, though.
Great. I learned that at a squat rack many years ago. I never forgot it. If you don't have goals, you're floundering.
Right. Yep.
Yep. Pretty powerful. So we're going to hit one last question. We're going to go back to AI. So if AI could assist you in one aspect of your personal life, what would you choose and why?
You know, this, I like this question because it's one that I think about on a regular basis. I would love to have a Jarvis. To me, when I say Jarvis, it's kind of, you know, the Marvel kind of Jarvis where I can ask questions and have a relationship. But one because the kind of relationship I'm talking about is one where, you know, I'll give you a working example. So the quantum patent we're working on right now, there's these things that we're trying to do that there's no documentation for it. So, or if there is, it's really sparse. I mean, we don't have access to it. So the being able to talk with the AI to reason through something that, and I'm not a mathematician, so helping with the math, helping with the reasoning, helping with, you know, getting to a conclusion. And I'm doing this all the time anyway with different AI, different LLMs. That to me, though, in a way that's natural, that I can have it as a conversation, would be incredibly enabling for me. And I think that's a product. There's a product that's coming at some point where that will be the case, and I will be somebody who will making very heavy use of that because I'm traveling a lot. I could be having those conversations. I'm always curious and exploring things. I could have those conversations. I have deficiencies. You know, I'm not a mathematician. I could use that kind of system. So for me, that would be the unlock for Marcus Daly that I would use every day.
Well, I think that's right around the corner. So it's coming your way. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so.
I hope so. We're going to head to the next segment, which allows you to highlight some of the leading individuals, projects, or organizations that influenced you the most. Can you tell us about some leaders that you noticed in the world of AI and tell us who you would, you know, love to see even come on this podcast, whether our listeners could learn from?
Yeah. The one that I keep, I always find myself going back to is Andre Carpathy. Andre is somebody who used to work for Tesla, as you probably know. He used to be the director there over the autopilot and other systems. He has worked at OpenAI. I think he's still there now, or at least he went back to that. But the reason why I respect him so much is not so much because of where he is or has worked. I just use those as a frame of reference just to make sure people can look up the right person if they're interested. It's because of the fact that he's somebody who spends a lot of time trying to educate people on the space out of his own, from what I could tell, just goodwill, right? So he'll get on these YouTube videos, articles. He actually does some amazing things with LLM OSs, which are absolutely front edge of the curve. Does these different, and he takes the time to explain it. Like he actually takes joy in explaining how this stuff works. And when he explains it, it's like, wow, I wish I could be that clear about how this works. And he's even also, you know, very open about the deficiencies. And so to me, the world needs more people like that, you know, less fear mongers, less people perhaps are going to say that it's more capable than it is because he's very honest about what it can and can't do. More of those sort of things would really help everybody in the world move this forward at a faster pace and a safer pace.
That's fantastic. That's a great suggestion for people to go and find and follow him. I think that's a part of the power of putting the power of AI in someone's cell phone to the degree you discussed earlier. It does that naturally because, you know, we all have a lot of power. We don't have to get what we can and hold it really close and preserve it. The more you collaborate, the more you gain. For lack of a better word, I love where it's all going. Is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to? Maybe share their contact for X or something like that that we've missed here.
I have my algorithm that gives me a lot of stuff, so I kind of get sampled, you know, a lot of things. But one I would probably call out. This is going to seem maybe too easy, but I actually really mean it. I would call out Elon Musk. And I would call out XAI. Why? like that, I don't think that they get enough credit for the work they're doing with Grok. I mean, Twitter or X is a massive data repository. There are no copyright issues. It is information that is very diverse. And I believe that, and I like what the approach that they're taking, because the approach they're taking is one where they're not listening to all the noise and other things that people are throwing at them. Instead, they're trying to solve some interesting problems, specifically in terms of building good AI. And look, you could argue whether or not you agree with some of the politics that are there. I'm not talking about politics when I say that. I'm talking about the fact that it's nice to see new startups, I'm going to say startup, but a new organization dedicated to trying to further the space and trying to do so in a way that is ethical. And I just don't think they get enough credit. Like, there's a lot of other people that get credit. And, you know, Andre gets some incredible credit and he deserves it, as does, you know, Tesla, as does, you know, all the other, if you go on Hugging Face, so many amazing organizations on Hugging Face. But XAI in particular seems to, for whatever reason, not get that much credit for the work that they're doing. And I think we're going to see a lot out of them, along with a lot of others I'm not mentioning. But you asked about Twitter. That would be one I would call out. So
I agree with you, because Grok is absolutely amazing. My perception of it, it's not looking for fanfare. It's taking the database they've got to assess all the information that's in there. No one else has it but them in that manner. They're just developing a very, very valuable product.
It is, it's different. I feel like Meta and OpenAI are kind of like, you know, fighting each other for this space. And you know, and by the way, Meta has an amazing database too, right, with Facebook. But I think that there's a bit of that competition. And I, and to exactly the point you're raising, I don't feel like Grok and XAI is trying to compete that way, right? And it, that makes it very interesting to me, because it feels like they're like trying to like this. They're not, and back to my earlier comment, they're not being skeuomorphic. They're trying to take a different approach. Yeah. And my feeling is that that leads typically to something groundbreaking. You don't necessarily know what it is until you get there, but it leads to something truly interesting. And I do feel like that's there's a possibility that they'll end up there and we'll all be very impressed in learning something that we didn't know was possible with this technology.
Yep. Well, this next segment, well, the whole podcast, in fact, is for the benefit of our listeners, obviously, but this one is specifically to give them something they can roll their sleeves up with. Do you have any AI tips, some ways that you use AI that you might be able to suggest or recommend for our listeners to actually go utilize as well?
Yeah, I'm going to avoid the ChatGPT commentary. I do think what OpenAI has built there is amazing. Fantastic product, personally. I think Microsoft's work there is amazing too, in terms of Bing. I wanted to maybe say something that perhaps is a little less well known. One of those is Open Interpreter. For those who are not familiar with Open Interpreter, it is a project that is a command line project, but it uses whatever LLM you want to use. It generates code on your local machine and allows you to be able to automate your machine. Now, because when I say automate your machine, it is way more than that. You can chat with it. You can have it do all whatever you want to do as a chat interface. But the fact that it can write code that can actually be used on your local machine to process files, to test a product, to explore different ideas from a code perspective, I always feel like code, when combined with natural language, is really the unlock here for human race, right? If I can now do both of those things and have it be smooth and seamless, I can do so many more things more quickly on my local machine, remotely, over the web, than I could can't otherwise, right? So to me, Open Interpreter is let me say it's a perfect project, but man, it's pretty amazing. And it's definitely worth taking a look at. Another one would be LM Studio. I'm not sure if that's been mentioned before, but LM Studio is a wonderful product. Yeah, LM Studio is you go into LM Studio, you can select whatever models you want from Hugging Face or elsewhere. And then it will load those models and allow you to be able to then work with those models. And so when you wanted, like, if you've got a project where you want to make use of an open source model, perhaps you want to do some fine tuning on it, loading it into LM Studio and working with it there allows you to just rip through a ton of these things, get personal experience with them, and then kind of pick the one you want. Or, you know, for somebody like me who travels all the time and doesn't have internet access sometimes, a lot of the time, I now can have a local on my machine. And I can be doing interesting things with both of those products. It's part of why I've mentioned them, because I use them when I'm flying or doing other things. And so they also have that benefit of being offline, still being just as useful.
Those are a couple of fantastic, useful tips. Maybe the best we've heard of real practical stuff. So those that know AI very well can know what they can get out of it and they use it. And those that don't, it's a great place to start. Just get a little bit familiar and you've got a practical, useful tool. So I think it's really great for sure. So Marcus, where can listeners go to learn more about you and some of the projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I'm so busy all the time. I don't spend a whole lot of time only in two places that are public. One is LinkedIn, a lot of time on LinkedIn. I've found great value in that social network. So you'll see stuff there. And then on X, I'm on there as well. X for me is a little bit different than LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I'm usually interacting a little bit more. X, on the other hand, I feel like there's some real people I have respect for who I pay attention to their posts and I get those in as a feed and so forth. But then occasionally I will also post things. And so you can see what I'm doing through both of those pretty well with the different companies I'm in.
Marcus Daly, you've been amazing. This has been really, really informative. And I just can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on Edge of AI.
Thank you. This has been great, man. I really appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
Fantastic. It's time for another safe landing at the outer edges of the AI universe for today. This is your Captain Ron. And on behalf of our guest and the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for choosing to voyage with us today. We wish you a safe and enjoyable continuation of your journey. When you come back aboard, make sure to bring a friend. Our Starship, it's always ready for more adventures. Head over to Spotify and iTunes right now. Rate us and share your thoughts. Your support and feedback mean the world to us. Don't forget to visit edgeofai.xyz, where you can learn more about partnering and subscribe to our Outer Edge newsletter for the latest Edge of company news, events, and show drops. In addition, connect with us on all the major social platforms by searching for edgeof_AI. Join the exciting conversations that are all happening there. And before we sign off, mark your calendars for our next voyage. We'll continue unraveling AI's mysteries and advancements. Until then, bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Edge of AI reflect solely those views and opinions of the show hosts and its guests. Please make sure to do your own research. While we make every effort to ensure that the information about AI technology is accurate and up to date, we cannot guarantee its accuracy, completeness, or timeliness. We make no representations or warranties of any kind with respect to the information, products, or services discussed. Please be aware AI may occasionally generate incorrect or misleading information and produce offensive or biased content. Under no circumstances shall we be liable for any loss or damage, including without limitation, indirect or consequential loss or damage, or any loss or damage arising from loss of data or profits arising out of or in connection with the use of technology discussed on our podcast. Additionally, our show is not financial advice. You understand that you are using any and all information available on or through this podcast at your own risk. Whenever making financial decisions, we recommend doing your own research and talking to your accountant for financial advice. Lastly, time to time, we may feature sponsored content on the show for which we receive value, and we may share links for which we receive a commission if you make a purchase through one of these links. Refer to our website, edgeofai.xyz, for our full disclaimer, terms and conditions, privacy policy, and copyright notice. The views and opinions expressed on Edge of AI reflect solely those views and opinions of the show hosts and its guests. Please make sure to do your own research. While we make every effort to ensure that the information about AI technology is accurate and up to date, we cannot guarantee its accuracy, completeness, or timeliness. We make no representations or warranties of any kind with respect to the information, products, or services discussed. Please be aware AI may occasionally generate incorrect or misleading information and produce offensive or biased content. Under no circumstances shall we be liable for any loss or damage, including without limitation, indirect or consequential loss or damage, or any loss or damage arising from loss of data or profits arising out of or in connection with the use of technology discussed on our podcast. Additionally, our show is not financial advice. You understand that you are using any and all information available on or through this podcast at your own risk. Whenever making financial decisions, we recommend doing your own research and talking to your accountant for financial advice. Lastly, time to time, we may feature sponsored content on the show for which we receive value, and we may share links for which we receive a commission if you make a purchase through one of these links. Refer to our website, edgeofai.xyz, for our full disclaimer, terms and conditions, privacy policy, and copyright notice.